Welcome to Federal Insight, sponsored by Verizon. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Nearly every federal mission relies somehow on information technology. Delivery of technology depends on networks, the basic piece of IT infrastructure. Networking technology itself continuously evolves. Now agencies across the board are evaluating their networks. For how one agency is thinking about its wired and wireless strategy for the future, I spoke with the Deputy Chief Information Officer of the EPA, David Updike.
EPA has an MPLS network. It's a managed network. We've operated it under the GSA Networks contract for the life of that contract. We're in the process of transitioning now to GSA's Enterprise Infrastructure Services, EIS contract. We awarded that contract and we're in transition. Hopeful of transitioning completely by the spring of this year. I'm sure you're aware of some delays in that process, so that may move on a little longer.
What were some of the hurdles you had to overcome to just find the right contractor, and doesn't matter who it was, and negotiate with them? Was it a difficult contract to use? Because so many agencies made it so much later than they had hoped it would be.
It was a challenge getting there. It always is for these large government contracts. Networks was that way. EIS is, has had some struggles in getting going. But now that we are there, I think everyone is focused on service delivery and overcoming some of the challenges that they've encountered, in the initial stand up. So I'm confident that our vendors are aware of where they need to go and are doing everything they can to get us there and get us over the transition hump.
And what have been the limitations of MPLS that you're trying to overcome? I'm presuming you're not just simply switching MPLS vendors and sticking with the same technology.
Well, right now, that's what we're doing, right? Day one, we're doing operations, right? Steady state operations, keep everything moving. Once we've gotten over that transition hump, then we'll start to look at modernization, and we'll do that, with our provider. We'll be looking at 5G and SD-WAN to improve our efficiency and resiliency and overall service delivery.
Yeah, talk about what your plans would be then. So first, you're just going to switch vendors to get under the new contract and then take it step by step. What do you hope to accomplish with the next network? What would it do that would enhance EPA's mission, or what functionalities might it have that you don't have now?
Well, so we have a lot of small sites. So, in the small site framework, 5G VPNs and SD-WAN will help us integrate those in a more efficient way. There's opportunity for better redundancy for even our larger sites with 5G, alternatives for that last mile, capacity on demand. If the pricing is right, that'll be good. We're all marching towards ZTA. So, SD-WAN is a big player in that framework. So beyond those things, we have with our service provider now, our VPN and our trusted internet connections. Those things will migrate towards TIC 3.0 solutions and more SD-WAN integrations overall. So I think that's really the broader picture of, where we're going, and I think, where others are.
And with respect to SD-WAN, software-defined wide area networks, is that because of the cloud era? I mean, what's the real advantage there?
I think there's many, right? I think we have finer grain controls of policy. We've got fewer devices, fewer control surfaces out there to actually manage those policies. We have the ability to integrate local connectivity to internet and, directly to our cloud services, again, with TIC 3.0. So I think that's really in COVID or after COVID, right, our networks sort of turned inside out, right? We used to be on the network going places. Now we're getting back to the network or to our resources. And so, we have multi-cloud integrations right now. We've already gotten ourselves to a place where we can deal with most of our major cloud services without VPNing. And we hope to get, to that spot for everything in the future.
Right. The VPN is kind of seems like what a lot of agencies want to get around. And many agencies are talking about this idea of the virtual PC image type of thing where people are accessing a virtual PC across an SD-WAN to simplify infrastructure and reduce cost. Are you looking at that also?
Well, we have that today. I mean, as far as, we offer to all users in the agency, a virtual desktop device that can be accessed by anyone from anywhere using their local connectivity. So I'm not sure how much, you know, SD-WAN will have to come into play for that. I'm sure it can offer some greater layers of security potentially, but, you know, the majority of our workforce today, is at least, 50% of the time or better working remotely, right? So the focus really from a security standpoint is out on the endpoint. And we've achieved a good bit of that as everyone else has, and we've got some more to go, but that's really where we see, you know, things are inside out now.
And with respect to the regulated entities that regularly send data to the EPA, will this affect their lives in some way? And will this efficiency increase for that whole periodic and ongoing data collection for the EPA?
I don't have a sense that that will change that much. EPA already has a network of services that are provided to those service providers. The applications that support that, the central data exchange, are already cloud enabled. They may see a shift of where they send their traffic, but I don't think that the SD-WAN really impacts our integration with, you know, the regulated community or the states and other partners that we work with.
Got it. And let's talk about the wireless component of this 5G. I mean, 5G is there, they say, but 4G has been there all along. So what do you feel that 5G can do that maybe was not practical with 4G when you get to that point of getting to the 5G?
Well, I mean, I think one is once it is there, right, I think it has the opportunity to fully service a lot of our sites that are smaller sites. And even in conversations we had the other day, looking at our next generation of voice services, you know, that alternate path, having 5G enabled directly to our MPLS network as an alternate path, that's a game changer. You know, I think ultimately, if 5G is there and reliable, it may become the pathway of choice, right? I mean, who wants to deal with the last mile, right? That's a big challenge when you have lots of locations. So I think the promise is there. We just have to see it play out, in the real world.
In other words, there would be a much more extensive wireless infrastructure for basic operations like backhaul and also direct connectivity right into EPA applications?
Yes.
But you're not there yet.
We're not there yet. I mean, again, the transition of our contract will be a year-long transition. Once we're good with that, stable there, that's when we'll start looking at our alternatives for the future.
And what effect will this transition have on physical infrastructure, wires, and so on?
The wires are there for now, right? I think, you know, the progressive iteration will be when we go to replace, whether it's, you know, local routing and switching, or certainly, the wired infrastructure. And at that point, you know, then if 5G is there and if 5G has the right capacities, great. But, for the near term, I think for the next 3 years or so, I don't see us moving away from the standard wired infrastructure within our facilities.
Right, because one of the issues, I guess, is that not every device is 5G at this point either. I mean, you've got to have 5G.
Not every device is 5G. I've got, 15,000 laptops. They're not 5G. So, I mean, we have wireless in many locations, but not all locations. So we'll go ahead and drop our, Wi-Fi in and keep that moving.
David Updike is Deputy Chief Information Officer of the EPA. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin. Welcome back to our interview with David Updike, Deputy Chief Information Officer of the EPA. Our topic is the agency's network strategy as the agency leaves the networks program from GSA and transitions to the EIS. And a lot of agencies have been working on security and reliability and basic speed of that home connection, because with so many people teleworking regularly, you're dealing with a garden variety of situations. What's your latest thinking there?
Well, again, you know, most of our core productivity services are in 365. We have access to 365 for our users without VPN services for the most part. I think most folks are doing pretty well with that. So we don't, we're not, other than our focus on securing those endpoints, I think we generally have, you know, high productivity and with our user base over their local networks.
And what about the data centers or data facilities, edge computing that EPA still has, and interaction with cloud providers? Does the EIS era change how you architect that and deal with that whole layout?
I think it will ultimately, right? Again, today we have our cloud services actually integrated as part of our MPLS network, right? So we take, for those things that don't communicate directly, for example, with our 365 services, then they're going to cross our TIC boundary, come in through our internet connection, go back out through a net bond to AWS and Azure. So as we move to SD-WAN, we'll be able to take that, shape that traffic and ship it out to the internet and go directly to them. So that'll reduce our burden within our internet connectivity and, you know, with our cloud connectivity and with the net bonds on the backside of that. You know, I think, you know, from our hosting frameworks, you know, we have two tiered data centers. You know, those are sitting on our MPLS network. They're going to be around for a while. There's a lot of, you know, I mean, we're progressively moving things out into our clouds, but the tiered data centers will be there for the foreseeable future. And you know, hopefully what we'll be able to do is trim down some of our access commitments. Right?
Got it. Let's talk about security for a moment. You mentioned you'd be moving to TIC 3.0. Everybody's talking about zero trust, and that affects end users. You don't want to drive them crazy, but, you know, zero trust implies some changes in procedures, some changes in what is challenging users and devices to get onto the networks. What are your plans there?
Well, I mean, we're marching down the presidential directive, just like everybody else is. You know, our focus right now really is on multi-factor authentication. Our focus is on enterprise services for all those things. So we were fortunate walking in to this year, but we've had in place for several years enterprise services for identity and access management. Beginning of this year, we drove all of our external applications to login.gov for identity services, and drove those applications into our integrated identity access and management. Now this year, we're basically marching through and doing that internally. So we already had the plan in place really to drive all of our applications into the enterprise services for identity and access management. So that's a big lift, and it's certainly where we, you know, will keep going. I think as the authentication frameworks mature, will that access will become somewhat ubiquitous. Users will not need to be anywhere, any place specifically. So there's a lot more freedom that comes with ZTA. Anywhere, any place, potentially any device, right? We talked earlier about VDI and other methodologies to move away from the managed endpoint.
And you've also discussed how Office 365 is the basic application there for productivity and email and so on, like a lot of agencies. But I've also heard several agencies say that, you know, the next round of cloud or software as a service applications will get maybe up the food chain to maybe some enterprise types of lines of business applications, HR, finance, and so forth. A couple of agencies are there that might require, you know, adopting some practices to match more closely what the commercial offerings have. But does the network play a role in that kind of thinking? And how do you look at it?
I mean, it does, but I don't think it's that much different of a role than we've already talked about with ZTA. I mean, the services are going to move to cloud, right? And the cloud is going to have a protection framework. And that protection framework either will be enough to stand alone, right? Or it'll need some extra protections from our network. Where it stands alone, we'll be able to route directly to it. Where it needs additional protections, we'll route it through us. We've already done actually quite a bit of that. Our acquisition systems, we moved to cloud this year. We have a presence in Salesforce with quite a few applications there, mission applications. So I don't think that other than the changing the way we shape our traffic, right? And policy-based enforcement of that, segmenting and so forth. But I think that that's the,
sure.
I don't think there's a big shift there.
And what about visibility or observability of network traffic and network architectures and activities and so on? Will that need to change at all, or do you feel like when, again, this eventual change to SD-WAN from MPLS will affect the way your network operations centers are able to see into the networks and observe what's going on for that traffic shaping and security new techniques that you envision?
That's another area where we're continuously improving under the CDM program, working with our cloud providers. So I think that, you know, what we'll see is a growth of visibility and AI influence on network telemetry that will bring together a pane of glass, a control surface that will allow us to jointly with our providers, manage those NOCs and SOCs, manage the vulnerabilities.
And what are some of the cost implications here? If you are trading MPLS for MPLS right now, are you getting just the same cost basis? And what are your aspirations for, again, this eventual move to SD-WAN and 5G cost-wise? What are you trying to accomplish there long-term?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the move across is a slightly better pricing in our current framework. And so, we're always looking to reduce the cost as much as we can. I don't know that I can project much more than that. There's a lot of factors going on these days with pricing. So,
right.
I think to the extent that we can keep prices level or down, that's, always our target.
Right. I've never heard an agency say, well, we're hoping to increase our costs long term.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen very much.
I think what we end up often is trading capabilities, right, within the same cost envelope, right? I think that's really probably the move that we'll see.
Sure. And just once again, maybe review the capabilities that you want to have over time, eventually, that you're not getting now.
Well, really, it's the flexibility to drive traffic in the most cost-effective direction, and the capability to have finer-grained control over to shape the traffic, to zone the traffic, and just have a finer-grained control over the network as a whole.
And for that kind of control and shaping, I mean, isn't there an element of automation that would have to come to that?
Absolutely. You know? The growth in configuration complexity is giant, and certainly there'll have to be automation to take advantage of the capabilities.
And how does that divide up between what EPA will have to do and what you say to the vendor, you're going to have to do this?
Well, again, from the WAN standpoint, most of that will be the vendor, right? We have a managed WAN. They operate our network and most of our edge services. We will have to manage the internal configuration of that, and I think we'll have to come together in partnership, to divide up that stack.
And just out of curiosity, did you stick with the networks vendor through to EIS, or did you switch? Again, no need to name names.
We're with the same vendor.
I see. So they're aware then of your roadmap from MPLS to what they would eventually offer down the line.
I would hope so.
And why not just jump to the new things right now? What was the strategy? And
well, we have a large network, steady state transition, keeping the lights on. That's the number one for operations, right? And some of the newer solutions are not all that cooked and proven, and we need to go through that design process with the vendor, right? And that's why we didn't know that we were going to end up with the vendor that we ended up with. We did end up with the vendor we ended up with. So we intentionally put that next generation of work in the EIS contract.
And a lot of the smaller agencies still have to make that transition. I think most of the big ones are finally at EIS. Any advice for, the small fry that might want to eventually get with the program, because everyone's going to have to, because networks won't go forever?
Well, I mean, all I can say is it is a struggle to get in, get over the hump. But once you're there, I think the value of having the managed services through EIS is worth that effort. They will continuously improve. And I think we're better off, as a federal government, leveraging those kinds of solutions.
David Updike is Deputy Chief Information Officer of the EPA. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Tamman.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network.